This is Wilderness and Wildlife, presented by the Gallatin Wildlife Association in Bozeman, Montana.
This is a half-hour program featuring commentaries and interviews with wildlife and wilderness advocates relating to the unique natural environment that we enjoy in the wild lands of the West and all across America. I'm your host, Jay Shell. Today we're doing something a little bit different than we've previously done. I'm going to read to you several articles that have appeared in various publications and that I think will be of interest to you. So I've collected these and let's get started. The first one is from the Rewilding Institute, and it's about ocelots showing up in Arizona. Article goes like this. Ocelots, like jaguars, belong in Arizona. They are one of the missing species, appearing only occasionally. Six ocelots have been recorded in Arizona since 2009. Only two are currently known to be living in the state. With incredible new footage that's been released by the Center for Biological Diversity, we can see an ocelot who was first photographed earlier this year by researchers with the Phoenix Zoo and believed to be a young adult. These cats are showing us how important connectivity is within their range. The new ocelot moved quite a distance between detections and across an interstate, which is an incredible feat. Threats to the surrounding Sky Island Mountains, where this pint-sized cat roams, include two proposed mines and the bisecting of habitat by the U.S.-Mexico border wall, which has been disastrous for all kinds of wildlife. Over in Texas, the ocelot population is larger, but it's also shrunk to fewer than 100 remaining in the wild. Earlier this month, the Caesar Clayburgh Wildlife Research Institute held a groundbreaking ceremony for its upcoming ocelot conservation facility to begin a captive breeding program. While the team is still a few years from having ocelots released, this is a huge step to increase the numbers of the South Texas wildcat. It also charts a path that we can learn from for both ocelots and jaguars that are further west. And then we have an article from the Center for Biological Diversity about wolves around Flagstaff. It's titled, Flagstaff Wolf Removal Violates the Endangered Species Act, warned conservationists. Conservation groups filed a notice of intent to sue the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to stop the effort to capture wolves that have established a home range north of Interstate 40. In response to relentless pressures from state game and fish agencies, federal regulators prohibit endangered Mexican gray wolves from dispersing into and occupying suitable wolf habitats north of Interstate 80. This purely political position has no basis in conservation biology science. At least two and possibly more presumed Mexican gray wolves have been discovered in the vicinity of Kendrick Peak, northwest of Flagstaff, Arizona. A federal permit allows for the capture and return of Mexican wolves that disperse from the designated recovery area, you know, which is all of Arizona and New Mexico, between I-40 and the Mexican border, into areas north of I-40. These are not the first wolves who have journeyed north of I-40, where Mexican wolves are fully protected under the Endangered Species Act. But these are the first uncollared wolves to have been discovered north of I-40. Thus, it cannot be proven through radio telemetry tracking that these wolves were born in the designated Mexican wolf recovery area and subsequently dispersed to the area that they now occupy north of I-40. Conservation groups have opposed the unscientific I-40 barrier to wolf dispersals since its inception. This notice announces yet another attempt to litigate this issue. Three conservation groups today notified state and federal agencies that ongoing efforts to trap and relocate Mexican gray wolves west of Flagstaff violate the Endangered Species Act. The wolves known as the Kindred Peak Pack have been thriving in this area near the Grand Canyon since at least June. These tenacious Mexican wolves belong right where they are. So we're putting wildlife officials on notice that they'll be breaking the law if they try to relocate them, said Michael Robinson, a senior conservation advocate at the Center for Biological Diversity. Instead of trapping and removing the Kindred Peak Pack, state and federal officials should be doing everything they can to ensure that Mexican wolves recover. Mexican wolves living north of I-40 are fully protected under the Endangered Species Act, including its ban on trapping and other harm. Today's notice advises the USDA's Wildlife Services and Arizona Game and Fish Department that they lack any permission to trap the Kindred Peak wolf family. The only relevant permit authorizes the trapping and relocation of Mexican wolves that have dispersed from what is called the Mexican Wolf Experimental Population Area. That area encompasses all of Arizona and New Mexico, south of I-40 to the Mexican border. The permit's authorization to trap or move wolves does not apply to wolves in the vicinity of Kindred Peak because their origins are not known. It's entirely possible that these wolves were born to parents who have been living undetected outside of the experimental population area, said Greta Anderson, who's deputy director of the Western Watersheds Project. The vast and wild Grand Canyon ecoregion is perfect habitat for wolves, but the agencies insist on keeping wolves south of I-40 for wholly political reasons. The Kindred Peak wolf family is being trapped for alleged conflict associated with public lands, grazing, and allotments. No efforts to protect the cattle from predation have been implemented on these lots, and the cattle are scheduled to be removed from the allotments at the end of October. The livestock industry is compensated for losses due to any wolf predation. Wolves are essential to the ecological health of the Grand Canyon ecoregion and should be allowed to find territories naturally, said Clara Musser, who's executive director of the Grand Canyon Wolf Recovery Project. Instead of translocation, we should work with communities to prevent conflict and foster a culture of tolerance and respect for these vital predators. Trapping risks the injury to the endangered wolves, even when it's done by government agencies. At least 17 gray wolves have died as a result of agency trapping and handling since 1999. Moreover, the notice explained that allowing Mexican wolves to expand their range northward into the Grand Canyon ecoregion would further their conservation as the Endangered Species Act requires. And then we have a proposal for a new national park in the northwest corner of Montana. And so this is a proposal by an organization called Restore the North Woods. And the article is written by George Werther and Michael Kellett. The Cabinet Yak region of northwest Montana, along the Idaho border, is little known outside of the region. The area contains the Cabinet Mountain Wilderness, plus numerous proposed wilderness areas like Scotchman's Peak, Cube Iron Silcox, Roderick Mountain, and Northwest Peaks, among others. The Cabinet Mountains are quite spectacular. Elevations range from a low of 2,880 feet to 8,738 feet atop Snowshoe Peak, nearly as much elevation gain as the Tetons above the Jackson Hole Valley. There remains one glacier on Snowshoe Peak. Designated a primitive area in 1935, the 94,272-acre area then became part of the National Wilderness Preservation Act of 1964. Several major rivers flow through the region, including the Clark Fork, the Bull, the Yak, and the Kootenay. This is the inland rainforest of the state. Here you will see species that are much more common on the west coast, like western hemlock, western white pine, western red cedar, and other tree species. Other trees with a limited distribution, like subalpine larch, grace the highest summits. The abundance of precipitation, much of it coming as snow in the winter months, sustains carbon-rich forests with some of the largest trees in Montana. One example is the Ross Creek Cedar Grove of ancient western red cedar. The area is rich in lichens. The presence of some such as peppered moon lichen and nettled spicklebilly defines the limits of the inland rainforest. The abundance of hair lichens once supported mountain caribou. However, industrial logging led to the loss of the caribou's favorite habitat, which was rich in lichens. And the last sighting of caribou occurred in 2018. Other unique or rare species that occur, species that occupy the Cabinet Yak ecosystem include grizzly bear, wolf, wolverine, bull trout, lynx, white sturgeon, and red-side rainbow trout. Although rainbow trout has been widely stocked across Montana, the Kootenay River drainage is only natural range for rainbow trout in Montana, parts of Montana. The majority of the land is under federal administration as part of the Kootenay National Forest. Libby, Montana, with little more than 3,000 residents, is the population center. The Yak Valley, in particular, is lightly settled. It's been the subject of numerous books by former Yak resident Rick Bass. Like many rural communities, Libby has suffered sufficient economic setbacks in recent years. The timber industry declined with the shuttering of the Champion International and Louisiana. Pollution from nearby mines that produced vermiculite, which was contaminated with asbestos, led to the town's inclusion in the United States. And compounding these challenges, the Kootenay National Forest continues to promote large-scale timber cutting in the region. This is harming the inland forest ecosystem. Proposed Black Ram Project. A federal judge halted the project in response to legal challenges, but it's likely to be modified and put back on the table for future logging. Among the impacts of this massive proposal would be the creation of 100 miles of new roads that would reduce critical security habitat for grizzly bears. Dr. Dominic Della Sella, our leading authority of old growth forests, conducted a field visit to the Black Ram Logging Project area. He says, "I can say unequivocally that this site is old growth. It's critically important to its surroundings. It has key climate and refugia properties, including the potential for large amounts of above and below ground carbon to continue to accumulate over centuries. Additionally, the U.S. Forest Service claims that Black Ram is for climate resilience. while my observations show it would have the opposite effect. To add insult to injury, the proposed Black Ram timber sale would lose $3.2 million because the cost to plan and administer the project would be much greater than the meager revenue from selling the timber. As a result, a public opposition to the Black Ram project. The Friends of Scotchman's Peak and Yaak Valley Forest Council, among the groups working to protect different portions of the Cabinet Yaak ecosystem, have done a tremendous job of promoting the area's wildlands. The Wildlife Federation and the Wilderness Society support the Black Ram logging project, as does the Kootenai tribe. They accept the scientifically questionable claims by the Forest Service that this logging will restore forest health and reduce fire risk. The Black Ram is only one of many logging proposals. Ecosystem integrity, not to mention the loss of carbon and climate moderation. So what is a potential solution? One means of providing greater protection to the region and its incredible wildlands and wildlife is the Alliance for Wild Rockies Northern Rockies Ecosystem Protection Act. Acronym is protect all the region's wildlands and call for wilderness restoration for many previously logged forests. Although NREPA is by far the best and most comprehensive means of preserving wildlands of the Northern Rockies and has been introduced in Congress numerous times, this bold and visionary legislation has yet to be signed into law. Another option could be the creation of a Cabinet Yaak National Park with a wilderness overlay on all the roadless lands in the NREPA. The National Park Service prioritizes the preservation of ecological processes and native biodiversity rather than the intensive resource management, which is the focus of the Forest Service. As a result, commercial logging and other resource extraction is not allowed in national parks. Moreover, national park designation provides stronger protection for wildlife than is provided by the U.S. Forest Service management. For instance, the National Park Service prohibits trapping and hunting of predators such as wolves, lynxes, and wolverines. Some people are concerned that the creation of a national park will. However, it's critical to point out that some national parks receive less visitation than many designated wilderness areas. For example, North Cascades National Park in Washington received only 40,000 visitors in 2023. Protecting wildlife from human impacts is critical, and there are ways to protect sensitive wildlife through management of human recreational use. The National Park Service is far better at this than is the Forest Service. There's little question that a national park in northwest Montana would be an economic asset to the economically depressed Libby economy. There is ample research showing that national parks diversify and strengthen local economies. But more important, a new park would provide a way to preserve one of the nation's wildest landscapes. The new National Parks Campaign, which is a project of Restore the North Woods, is currently the only voice calling for a Cabinet Yaak National Park. However, such a proposal may gain greater support if the Forest Service continues to ignore public concern and continue its intensive logging agenda. Perhaps it's time to think outside of the box and take bold action for the long-term preservation of the Cabinet Yaak ecosystem by creating a new national park. Our next article is titled, Wildlife Rebounds from the Inn River Reservation. This is an article by Mike Koshbiel. It's about the Little Wind River drainage. Driving into the foothills west of Fort Washakie to tour experimental cheatgrass treatments, Bart Lawson's attention landed instead on the verdant vegetation that he saw in every direction, and something he didn't see at all, free-roaming horses. The landscape he was driving through had immediately dramatically rebounded following a massive roundup of non-native equines in late 2023. "Almost overnight results, really," said Lawson, who directs the Shoshone and Arapaho Fish and Game, which manages wildlife on the Wind River Indian Reservation. "The mule deer that I've seen since we removed horses is unreal," he added. "Really, deer I hadn't seen in 10 years. There was no doubt in Lawson's mind that the Wind River Indian Reservation, many thousands of feral free-roaming horses, are what displaced mule deer and an array of other native species. "We used to drive around and see horses," Lawson said during the June outing. "Now we can drive around and see wildlife. Adaptable, hardly and unencumbered by predation, horses can double their population every 4 years. On the reservation, they were growing in unreal numbers," Lawson said, "and obviously damaging the landscape's ecological integrity. The cheatgrass that's left over after horses have been there for a while, it's horrible," said Lawson. "There's no nutrition in cheatgrass." Some 7,600 free-roaming horses were rounded up and removed from the Wind River Indian Reservation in 2023 and 2024. Free-roaming horses dominate over the Wind River Range's eastern foothills, peaked just before last year's roundup. In late fall 2022, the first go at an aerial survey found 5,500 horses on 1 million acres of the reservation, roughly half the land area within the boundaries. That didn't account for animals the survey missed, or foals born into the herd the following spring. "We felt pretty confident there were at least 9,000 horses out there at that time," said biologist for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's Olander office. "The estimate was very shocking," he said. "Nationally, there were 73,520 free-roaming horses and burros as of March. At that time, the Bureau of Land Management estimated there were 10,264 animals in its Wyoming herd management areas, which means the reservation housed almost as many feral horses as the rest of the state combined." Inlicka shares Lawson's views on the immediate ecological impacts of the 2023 and 2024 roundups. "The increase in forage that's now available for wildlife was very dramatic," he said. "It was at an ecological crisis point," said Inlicka. "If something wasn't done, there was no turning back." Roughly 7,600 horses were gathered and trucked away over the last 2 years, he said. Another aerial survey is forthcoming. But in the meantime, Licka's confident that there are fewer than several thousand horses that remain now on the reservation. Back of the envelope calculations suggesting that 76 horses removed from the landscape frees up well over 100 million pounds of forage. "Now, that forage is available for wildlife," said Inlicka, "or for natural recycling, protecting the soil." Ahead of the horse removals, wildlife managers on the Wind River Reservation set up around 30 range monitoring sites to scientifically quantify how the range is recovering. One of those sites showed a 6- to 7-fold increase in the amount of residual forage remaining after the growing season. According, when horses were abundant, Inlicka would look around and For miles in every direction, see no residual grasses. Now the Wyoming brown and gold colors of fall have returned to the hillsides, sloping off the Wind River Range. That's the residual grass and forbs that are on the landscape that are still there because they haven't been consumed, said Enlicka. The return of those grasses and the forbs and less intensively burrowed browse shrubs has caused ample and welcomed ecological ripple effects. Lawson said there was a resurgence of mule deer in the area where they need all the help they can get. Pronghorns seem to thrive too, and were raising twins in noticeably higher numbers. A herd of 1,000-plus elk returned to calving grounds on high open ridges that they'd abandoned because they'd been completely covered in horses. A white-tailed deer fawn bound across a field in view of Lawson's truck windows as it was mid-conversation discussing the ecological effects of horse removal. We'll see more and more wildlife now, he said. It's almost like they thanked us. That concludes our program for today. Thanks for watching. This has been Wilderness and Wildlife, and I'm your host, Jay Schell. You can find more of our interviews at kgvm.org. Thanks for listening. See you next week. Bye.